Very excited to introduce our next guest. He is going to help us maybe negotiate a little bit better. He's been in practice for about 25 years in the entrepreneur space. He's represented entrepreneurs, investors, VCs, the whole gamut. He has a new book out called Negotiate Like a CEO. His name is Jotham Stein. Jotham, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Jim. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to be here because School for Startups, I've been doing that for a long, long time. That's why I wrote the book.
Excellent. We need some help and some advice. All right. So all I know about negotiating is you just be mean as hell. You know, it's the 50th anniversary of The Godfather. You know, your signature or your brains. One of the two. Simple choice. Negotiation's easy.
Well, it depends on what you're negotiating for, but it's easy if you know all. It's easy if you know. Well, you first have to start out knowing what the playing field's like, right? So if you're doing this in the startup world, you have to know what you want to do, what your goals are, how to protect yourself, and what your goals are, and who the other people are, who the other companies are, who the investors might be, who the people you're in business with. Once you know that playing field, then you can figure out how to negotiate, because every negotiation has a life cycle. So I don't agree with you that it's all you negotiate always being the mean.
Meanest. I was trying to set you up for some easy responses.
I figured as much. So sometimes mean is the right way. Sometimes saying nothing is the right way. You know, you have to know, and there's a lot of stuff in between. You have to know, the playing field and who the people are out there, what your goal are, and how much leverage you have. Because negotiation at the end of the day is all about leverage, and it's certainly about that in the startup world.
Well, I mean, don't we hope to go for a win-win scenario where everyone is happy? Should we start there or with that presumption that that can happen? Maybe that can't happen with a venture capitalist involved.
You should start out, any entrepreneur should start out trying to protect themselves, knowing how to protect themselves, knowing the downsides that can happen. You just mentioned venture capitalists. If you go into a deal with a venture capitalist and you don't know what they know, then you are starting out way behind in the negotiation. And you don't even know how to protect yourself. That's one of the reasons I wrote this book, because I live in that world. I've been doing this for more than 25 years with startups. So one of the key messages in Negotiate Like a CEO is, if you're an entrepreneur, you need to protect yourself. And how do you do that? Depends on where in the career you are and who you're negotiating with. So venture capitalists is a very, you mentioned that, it's a very specific area. For example, if you're negotiating to take money in from a venture capitalist, or if you're lucky, from a private equity individual, you have to know what liquidation preferences are. You have to know what cap tables are. There's a whole bunch of things you have to know. You have to know what the documents are. Part of the reason I wrote the book, because in that situation, if you're an entrepreneur and you don't know, then you don't even know how to protect yourself. So it's what I talk about often in the book, which is what you should really do is enter into what I call a professional prenuptial agreement, whether that's in an offer letter if you're an employee looking to advance your career, a one-line sentence, or a more experienced entrepreneur or executive might have an employment agreement. You can put things in there that protect you if things go wrong. And in the startup world, we all hope that things are going to go well. We all hope that everybody's going to have a successful career and a successful company, whether you're just looking to have a family-owned business company or a small partnership, or you're looking to go public in the future, whatever your dreams are. You want to protect yourself to make sure that if things don't go right, if things go wrong, and unfortunately they often do, you have protection. You protected yourself, you protected your family, and you protected your ability to come back and reincarnate and start again or find another career.
Can we go through some of the very stereotypical negotiations that an entrepreneur will encounter, and you give us your thoughts? For example, you're bringing me on as the CTO, and I'm going to write the website for you. And it's not that hard. A lot of other people could have done it. But, you know, nevertheless, I'm going to build the website for free. And in return, what percent equity do I get? How do we structure one of those initial come on board technology conversations?
From which perspective? The CTO's perspective?
Yes, from the CEO.
No, you mean the CTO. You mean the CTO's yes. coming on and wants to protect himself. Okay, first thing he wants to do, or she wants to do, is figure out how much equity at the company he or she's getting. So is she going to get, and that would depend on the size or the size of the company, depend on a lot of different dynamics, how important the website is. Is it, you know, a nice, good thing for the company to have, or is it the critical aspect of how they're going to sell their business? All right, there's a number of different components to that discussion of how much equity the CTO is going to get. But let's just say for the moment that that CTO is going to get 5% equity. All right, 5% of the fully diluted capital of the company. So what the CTO wants to do is enter into an agreement, whether it's an offer letter agreement, employment agreement, a consulting agreement, a stock option agreement, however the CTO wants to do it, to protect that equity. So because the company is almost surely going to have a provision that says either you build the site, and when we approve the site, we'll give you the 5%, or we'll give you a certain percentage every month until you vest, because you're going to do a lot more work after you build that website. Well, the CTO wants to protect him or herself, because what if he or she gets fired? Either the day before the website goes live, or if it's a four-year vesting schedule for the equity, after he or she has outlived their usefulness, after that website goes up. But if you put a clause in a contract that says, if you fire me for any reason, if you stop my consulting work for any reason other than for cause, and then you strictly define cause, you will forward vest me all of my equity. You will accelerate the vesting of all my equity. That CTO is protected. The other thing they have to know about is what's called liquidation preferences in a startup. So you can have all the equity in the world, but if somebody comes before you, that is the investor comes before you in taking money if there's a sale, that's called liquidation preferences or overhang. That equity might not be worth anything. So that CTO wants to ask a couple of questions to the CEO before signing the contract on the dotted line. So that CTO in this circumstance, I just told you, has protected their equity in case they get fired, in case they get let go. If somebody walks into the office and says, we don't like you anymore, that CTO can stick out their hand and say, you know what, I think it's really dumb that you're firing me, but that's okay. You give me all the equity and I will I'll walk out happily. And the second thing they've done is protect themselves on the issue of liquidation preferences, so they know that the value of that equity, that they're going to have something. And the third thing they need to do is, if they are getting options of equity rather than the actual stock itself, so or whatever profits interest, equity just means a security, some ownership in the company. But if they're getting something, which many startups give as options, you want to have a long time after you get terminated, after you get fired, after somebody says go out the door, to exercise those options, not just 30 or 60 or 90 days, which is the traditional. You want to have 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years. Why? Because if you have to pay for some of that equity, you don't want to pay for that equity until you know this company is going to do really well or has had an exit of some sort.
All right. We're buddies. We know each other from a previous job, and we're both there starting a business. And I threw in a little bit, and you knew a guy who helped, and it was my idea, but you threw in, you know, a little bit of this. And is this a 50-50, you know, a sort of nebulous? How do we come to terms with that kind of a negotiation?
Now, that's a really good question. And that depends on who is bringing what to the table and the personalities of everybody who's involved. So, you know, are family members involved? Do you go back a long way? And so forth. So, and it depends on, if you ask me the question, who I'd be advising. But if it's going to be 50-50, you certainly, each side wants protection against the other, and if things go wrong. If you're negotiating like that with your college buddy, let's say you're going into business and you're only going to get 25%, then you want to protect yourself, because I hate to say it, and first I want to say that many things go right, and I've seen many wonderful stories, and there are many people who are as honest as the day is long. I want to be very clear about that. But why you protect yourself is because multiple times over my 25-odd year career in the entrepreneurial world, the wrongdoer in a force out, the wrongdoer in a firing, is the person who stood up at the wedding. And you don't ever want to have that happen to you. You want to protect yourself. So if you're the 25% person in that circumstance, or you're going in to deal 50-50, you've got to have an arrangement to protect yourself, a professional prenuptial agreement, in case something goes wrong. And again, so many things go right, but I can tell you that it's not infrequent that things go wrong down the road.
At what point should I have a contract that represents me against my own company? And let's assume that, you know, eventually at 5 years, the company's doing $1.5 million in revenue and there's 10 employees and, you know, it's doing well, but, you know, eventually it's established its own entity-ism, you know? At what point do I defend myself against my own company?
100% of the time, unless you are the 100% shareholder, you're the 100% investor, you've bootstrapped everything, and you answer to no one. But if you're in a circumstance where it's your company, but you've taken in investors, and investors don't necessarily have to just buy equity, they can give you notes or convertible equity or debt or some sort, or you have partners in the business 100% of the time. Because you're setting yourself up for the future. You don't know how you're going to grow your business. At some point, you might want to take in big investment because you want to go out in the world and put out another product or grow your business internationally. And you, in my view, you start out at the beginning with an employment agreement or a protective agreement from the beginning. Now, the other possibility is to put it in place when you are going to lose control of your company. And there's various strategies. What I mean by that is you're going to give up too many seats on the board of directors. Might happen down the road. So there are various strategies, and lawyers differ on when you should put that protective employment agreement or protective stock option agreement or protective equity agreement in place. I believe 100% of the time you should do it right up front so that you have complete control as you go down the road. And those that are looking in to do things with your company, whether they are to invest or to join your company, they see that you are there, it's your company, and you're protected. It's really 100% important to do this if you're ever going to take in outside investment, like from a venture capitalist or from a private equity company.
But the problem is that I'm going to have to pay for it, right? So there's $1,000 that I'm going to spend, you know, so I'm not going to do this early on. Right. So this, I keep putting it off. You know what I mean? Isn't that the way you would see it?
You see that many times. That happens a lot. And, you know, I understand you got to pay a lawyer. You got to get those contracts in place. So if you're totally a newbie and you have no money, that happens all the time. Then you need to put it in place before you're going to lose control of your company, which will typically happen if you take in significant investment or you decide to sell part of your company to someone else. That happens all the time, right? You take in partners. And at that point in time, it is the cheapest thing you can do looking over the long term to spend the money that you have, because now you've built the company a little bit, to protect yourself going forward. Remember, in that scenario, you've had nothing. You built your company. It's still your company. And you need to be protected for sure when you lose control of that company. But the idea is not to lose control. The idea is to have the contract set in place so you always have control of the company, which is also possible.
What's the thing that they always forget to do? What do you see the response? Oh, damn, if I'd only done that. What elicits that the most?
Well, I sound like I'm repeating myself, but putting in place a professional prenuptial agreement, whether it's an offer letter or whether it's an employment agreement, not protecting yourself from the downside. That happens so often. Listen, we all think things are going to work out really well. And if you starting a company that's you hope to grow, you believe that the corporate lawyer representing you, the company's lawyer is going to look out for your best interests. But that's not true. The corporate lawyer is looking out for the interests of the company. And so what happens so often is people come to me all the time and they've been screwed. They've been forced out. They've lost money. They've lost equity. And it's because they didn't protect themselves in the beginning. And that's why I wrote the book, Negotiate Like a CEO. I wrote this book to help people, to help entrepreneurs, to help executives, to help everybody, even the newbie, because they don't teach this stuff in undergraduate school, at a college or university. They certainly don't teach it at MBA school, how to look out for your own interests so that you're protected going forward. I see that all the time. I should have done this or I should have done that. And, you know, quite frankly, the shrewd CEO, that's why this is, the book is titled Negotiate Like a CEO. The shrewd CEOs, they put in place their severance agreement, their separation agreement on day one. And that's what a professional prenuptial agreement is. And in the case of equity, imagine a one-line sentence that says, if you terminate me without cause, at any point in time, you will accelerate all of my 3% equity in this company, period. One sentence. And people have a lot more leverage than they think. In that circumstance, somebody comes to terminate that individual or force them out or make their life miserable. The day they get fired, they have an acceleration of all their equity. And to answer your question, that's the mistake that entrepreneurs, executives, new employees make all the time. They have the leverage. They didn't use it because they thought everything was going to work out down the road. And that's how entrepreneurs, and the stories are many, they lose their metaphorical baby, their company, and somebody else takes over and forces them out, which is, it's easy enough to protect. It's why I wrote Negotiate Like a CEO, to help everybody. So they learn about this beforehand. And you know what? If you go into a situation where you're exposed, at least you'll go in with your eyes wide open, knowing all the great things that can happen, but all the other things to look out for. And that's how you advance your career over time. You can protect yourself and not let this happen.
Jotham, how do you want us to find out more, follow you online, get a copy of the book?
Well, you can get a copy of Negotiate Like a CEO by going directly to Amazon, and you can get it there. But if you want to learn more about my book, before buying it, please go to negotiatelikeaceo.net. That's negotiatelikeaceo.net, and you'll learn a lot about the book. And including what I didn't say is that there's 59 fictional stories in here to make it a really easy, easy and breezy read. So you'll learn not just about all the facts of how to negotiate, not all the upsides and downsides that can happen, but also with fun fictional stories that are repeat stories that happen over and over again, to teach you about this. And there's a couple of those stories that are on negotiatelikeaceo.net underscore it's a great book. You can buy it from that website as well. And it's really to help every entrepreneur that's listening in to your school for startups, because they don't teach this stuff anywhere that I know of, other than in my book.
Jotham Stein, thank you so very much for being with us. Great stuff in a book that all of us need to read and then have on our desk as a resource. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for having me on your show, Jim.
Well, I bet you know that music means we are out of time, but we are back tomorrow. Be safe, everyone. Bye now.